You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials have confirmed that two men were arrested on Oregon's North Coast on June 7th. The operation triggered additional concerns about a possible violation of Oregon's sanctuary law and resulted in one Astoria woman being pepper sprayed. Observers say ICE officers used Port of Astoria property to stage their vehicles. Port leaders say they were not aware ICE was using the property. The Oregon Department of Justice plans to send the port an inquiry letter. An ICE spokesperson dismissed concerns about the operation, saying ICE has the authority to make lawful arrests. The target of the June 7th operation was 53-year-old Marco Antonio Mendoza Cesar from Venezuela. According to ICE, he entered the United States illegally in 2022 and had a removal order. But local advocates say ICE has mischaracterized aspects of Mendoza Cesar's case. ICE officers also arrested Seaside resident Gerardo Sanchez Lopez, who came to the United States as a teenager and has lived in this country for nearly 30 years. He runs multiple businesses in Clatsop County.
He's a good guy, hardworking, always helping people.
That's Cynthia, a close friend and co-worker of Sanchez Lopez. She spoke to KMUN on the condition that only her first name be used. She says Sanchez Lopez has an adult son who lives with him and who struggles with mental health challenges. She is not sure where he will go now. Sanchez Lopez is being held at the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, Washington. The issue of how port property was used during the June 7th operation is expected to come up at a Port of Astoria Commission meeting tomorrow. To read more about this story, go to kmun.org/news. The longtime city administrator for St. Helens is presumed dead after he fell into the Columbia River Saturday night. Walsh was reportedly on a friend's boat and slipped and fell into the river while moving from the boat to the St. Helens city docks. He was swept downriver and not seen to resurface. Search and rescue efforts were ongoing throughout Sunday. The St. Helens City Council held an emergency meeting Sunday afternoon to appoint an interim city administrator. In a statement, Rainier Mayor Jerry Cole said Walsh dedicated years of service to local government and worked tirelessly on behalf of the citizens he served. Walsh worked in city governments across the Northwest. He came to St. Helens for the city administrator job in 2012. I'm Kitty Frankowitz, reporting for KMUN.
Health inspectors gave high marks to Clatsop County eateries in a recent report, with one notable exception. Most eateries, including food trucks and hotels, scored between 95 and 100. Only one restaurant scored in the 70s, Hurricane Ron's in Astoria. County officials said inspectors identified multiple priority violations, including mold growth, raw alligator meat in contact with frozen French fries, and several hand-washing violations. Health inspectors revisited the restaurant on June 8th. Because not all violations were corrected, Hurricane Ron's closed June 10th. The restaurant reopened the following day after all violations were fixed. Owner Ron Neva said many of the concerns involved paperwork requirements and differing interpretations of food safety regulations rather than an immediate threat to public health. Last year, Hurricane Ron's received a score of 25. Because the recent score was not Neva's first time receiving a low score, health inspectors required that Neva and one of his employees complete a food safety manager certification. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com.
You're listening to news on KMUN. Here's Ava Berardi with news from across Oregon and Washington.
A group of Oregon prisoners currently in solitary confinement filed a lawsuit challenging the conditions of their incarceration. They argue the state's prison system is violating the Oregon Constitution, which prohibits, quote, harsh, degrading, or dehumanizing treatment of prisoners. Ben Hale is an attorney with the Oregon Justice Resource Center, which is representing the adults in custody.
Oregon has certainly become an outlier in the use of disciplinary solitary confinement, which in some ways is the most punitive. People have very, very limited access to property and even hygiene products.
The lawsuit alleges adults in custody are held inside windowless rooms smaller than a parking space for 23 or 24 hours per day. The Oregon Department of Corrections declined to comment on the litigation. A spokesperson for the agency said it's committed to, quote, safe, secure, and humane operations. Data published by the agency shows a recent upward trend of adults in custody held inside disciplinary segregation units. Several members of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians recently shared their perspective about harvesting a humpback whale last November. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, it was to establish the mammal's cultural and historical importance to coastal natives.
For nearly 2 hours, the group spoke to 165 people at the Amanda Trail site in Yahats, near where the 10-ton juvenile humpback washed ashore last fall. Joshua Relatus talked of carving the baleen and blubber from the whale, much like his ancestors did before colonization. He was pleased that the event was well received.
It was a little nerve-wracking at first because you never know what to expect from the community, especially because of social media and just the perceptions people have. But people here have got a pretty good understanding of what it was like for us and the hard work and the respect and love that we had for the animal.
Controversy surrounding the harvest followed the whale's euthanization. Some online commenters made racist remarks or crude generalizations about Native people. But the Siletz say federal policies and a consent decree kept their traditions at bay for generations. I'm Brian Bull, reporting in Yahats.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. Now moving to news from Washington. More than $100 million. That's how much local government agencies are spending on the World Cup in Washington State. KUOW's Anna Boyko-Wyrock counted the money and explores whether it's worth it.
Let's talk about the cost to host the World Cup. It's not just the city of Seattle footing the bill. In fact, taxpayer money is going to the World Cup from the state and a lot of local cities and transit agencies. I pawed through dozens of government documents and found at least $110 million in public spending. Across the state, one of the largest costs is transportation.
So I'm here to tell you, my friends, we are ready.
That Sound Transit CEO Dow Constantine speaking at a news conference in May. Sound Transit is spending more than $20 million. One chunk of money is to fix infrastructure, like elevators and escalators. But most of it is just to keep people moving, with crowd management, signage, and more frequent trains on match days.
And now it is time to welcome the world aboard. Thank you so much.
Public agencies are expecting a lot of crowds and a lot of global attention. Across departments, they're staffing up and deploying people and equipment to key areas, just in case. In general, a lot of the spending is more like damage control than a long-lasting investment.
This is all a choice, to spend this much money on a one-time event.
Leah Salerno is an organizer with the Protect Our Pitch 206 Community Coalition, which is highlighting the impacts of the World Cup.
This money could be spent in a lot better ways that are sustainable and focus on the people that live here and building up our local communities.
Improving things for the long term, like public safety and education. After all, Washington State and the city of Seattle have budget holes. But public officials are banking on getting a positive return on investment.
The world is coming to Seattle, and that is an amazing opportunity for us as a state and as a city.
That's Governor Bob Ferguson speaking to reporters. He's expecting nearly $850 million in economic impact. That number comes from a study commissioned by the Seattle Tourism Bureau. I ran the numbers by an outside expert.
Guten Tag!
Very outside.
Hello.
Professor Wolfgang Menig is a sports economist at the University of Hamburg and an expert on the economics of mega sporting events. He says host cities usually hear a lot about the mega bucks that are supposed to roll in. But afterward, when academics examine the data, those big numbers basically vanish.
If studies, academic studies, find some effects, they are very, very, very small and very, very short term, but in general, neglectable.
Menig says there is no evidence that mega sporting events have a statistically significant effect on the local economy.
And how can that be? You know, I guess common sense, like
people... He explained that first, soccer tourists are just displacing regular summer tourists.
You will see some internationals, some German, French, Italian fans coming to the soccer games. But what we also see in almost all instances, there's a crowding out of normal tourism.
Meanwhile, locals might skip town. Not everyone loses, though, like food vendors.
Of course, the people who sell brezeln,
pretzels,
and würstel,
hot dogs,
and beer on these places, they might make a money.
But that's just money that would have gone to a different local business anyway. Now, even if the economics are a wash, Menig says something else could make hosting the World Cup worth it. It's called the feel-good effect. Some host cities get a short-term but significant boost in happiness. As for Seattle, it's just like the Germans say.
Ja, jede Party ist so gut, wie man sie macht.
Every party is as good as you make it. In Seattle, I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock.
Ahead of the World Cup, Mayor Katie Wilson's administration had boasted about opening new shelter beds to get homeless people off the streets. But KUOW Scott Greenstone found that sweeps of encampments are continuing, possibly even increasing.
Fluffy cottonwood seeds float through the Trolls Knoll Forest, a park in Fremont above the famous troll. City workers take down a tarp-covered pavilion tent. They toss bags and a filing cabinet down the stairs. Some energy drinks fall out, fizzing. Michelle Castillo grabs one, a Monster Energy. She's lived here the last couple months with her partner.
I don't know, I'm just angry, like, not at the city, at myself and my partner.
She opens the Monster, still good. Stapled on a tree nearby, there's a piece of paper announcing the sweep. She found it last night. Down the stairs, a garbage truck crushes everything she's not taking with her as the Fremont Troll watches silently. Bruce Drager is a volunteer who tries to help homeless campers get into shelter. He says he's been seeing more sweeps like this ahead of the World Cup.
And I guarantee you this is exactly what happened here, is that somebody said, wait a second, we got this tourist attraction out here that they have people camping next to.
Over 2,000 tents were cleared in the first 5 months of Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson's administration, according to numbers from the city. That's more than her predecessor did in the first 5 months of last year, 2024, or 2023. But Wilson said she's not doing more sweeps because of the World Cup.
I think there is an impression that we are doing, like, stepped up encampment removals or sweeps to prepare for FIFA, and we are not. You know, one of the big reasons I ran is that we have to stop just moving people from place to place, and we need to create more places inside for people to go. And so it never feels good when I know that encampment removals are happening and we're not able to offer shelter and services in a meaningful way.
Wilson pointed out people are moving into a tiny house village this week in Interbay that she found money in the budget to fund. I stepped into one of those 75 tiny houses with Dan Wise, a nonprofit veteran helping run the village. It took 5 months from site selection to opening day, unheard of speed.
I have opened a number of programs over the decades. I have been a social worker in this community, and this is by far the fastest. And a lot of that really is Mayor Wilson's call for urgency, and then the city offices, city departments responding to that call.
But Wilson's goal was opening 500 shelter beds by the World Cup. She hasn't, not even close.
That ambition and putting a big goal out there, I think, was effective in getting a lot of wheels turning fast. And then there is the downside, at least, I guess, politically, right, of having people be like, well, you said this and you failed, right?
The high goal also got support from the business community and philanthropy, who've spent millions to open more forthcoming tiny house villages and focus on housing a small group of people spending nights on the streets of Pioneer Square. But some of Wilson's supporters are frustrated. Jeff Paul is part of an advocacy coalition against homeless sweeps.
I really heard Katie talking about a different approach on the campaign trail. There are differences in what is happening, but one thing that has not changed is the sweep machine. You know, we were heartened when very early on in office, she paused one sweep in Ballard, but then just a few weeks later, she announced that the sweep would be going forward and that the work of the sweep team, the Unified Care team, would continue unabated and continue it has.
Back at the Trolls Knoll, the sweep is almost over, and Castillo's talking to a city outreach worker.
Ask again, do you want me to take you anywhere?
No, thank you.
Maybe McDonald's, she jokes.
That might not be in my city vehicle. Okay.
There's no shelter beds open today, he says, but writes down a number she can call tomorrow. I'm Scott Greenstone in Seattle.
More mixed-income housing will soon be available in Seattle. On Friday, a nonprofit land trust unveiled 30 new condos in Finney Ridge. Most units will be income-restricted, and organizers estimate they'll sell for about $300,000 each. When buyers eventually sell, they agree to do so at a formula that restricts their equity gain.
So these homes will always stay affordable, resale after resale.
That's Kathleen Hossfeld. She's the CEO of Homestead Community Land Trust, the nonprofit that owns the land the condos sit on. Washington State Senator Emily Alvarado says this housing model is a good one to replicate.
This is exactly what we should do more of in all communities across the state of Washington.
If a single person wants to apply for affordable housing, they need to earn less than $81,000 a year. Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. American Democracy Minute is up next, followed by the Ship Report with Joanne Rideout. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The FBI raided an Ohio civil rights group June 11th in an apparent attempt to find evidence of fraudulent 2020 voter registration activity. Pro-democracy leaders around the country have condemned the action as intimidation. The Ohio Organizing Collaborative works in Ohio's major cities, helping to register voters in black and brown communities. Speaking to the State House News Bureau, OOC board member Prentice Haney said FBI agents searched the organization's Cleveland offices, accessing and seizing laptops and cell phones, and interviewing the staff about purported illegal 2020 voter registration activity. Other agents, which Haney estimated at over 100, knocked on the doors of people associated with the organization and were, quote, demanding and accusing people of voter fraud as if it was a witch hunt and scaring the children, following them in their cars to school and to work. I mean, this was a full-out assault, Haney said. Ohio Congresswoman Amelia Sykes was one of the many leaders who condemned the raid, saying she was concerned about, quote, an apparent effort to use federal law enforcement to intimidate community organizers and halt voter registration. The Trump Department of Justice has issued no statement. The Ohio Secretary of State's June 12th website media statement made no mention of the raid, but instead celebrated its new America 250 I Voted sticker. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
This is KMUN.